Coming up on Money Bites by Smart Money People.
Elizabeth, you're breaking the fine chinas. They're family heirlooms.
Last question, 5 seconds left. If dogs could talk, what would they tell us?
Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, I love you, I love you, I love you. Take me for a walk, take me for a walk.
What do you think first-time buyers need to be particularly aware of when getting mortgage advice?
Their adverts should display this bank's a dictatorial dinosaur.
Well, make sure you check the terms and conditions.
Einstein said that something called compound interest was the eighth wonder of the world.
Welcome to Money Bites by Smart Money People.
Hello and welcome to Money Bites by Smart Money People. This week, we're bringing you our top 10 Money Bites moments of 2019. From prank calls, grilling big cheeses to award ceremonies and of course, Skittlemania. It's been a blistering debut for the Money Bites team, and me and my trusty co-host Nate are here to take you through some of our very best highlights. Well, where better to start than the Insurance Choice Awards 2019? It was a wonderful night, full of industry big cheeses. Take a listen as we grab the host, comedian Lucy Porter, for an impromptu round of Skittlemania questions.
And go. How many times in your life do you think you've sneezed?
Oh, thousands. Every morning at least 3 times. I love it. It's my best way to start the day.
True or false? Tricycles are less environmentally friendly than bicycles.
False.
It's true. It takes more wheels.
Okay.
Which Spice Girl would make the worst landlord?
Which who? Spice Girl? Oh my God, scary.
How many Skittles are in a standard pack?
52.
Where do you look when being sung Happy Birthday to?
At my feet.
If you were told to perform on Stars in Their Eyes, who would you perform as?
I would be Morrissey.
What would you call your insurance startup?
My insurance startup would be called, oh God, you've had a terrible time. Come here, love, I'll give you a cuddle.
Would you mark earnestly or be tactical with your ratings on Come Dine With Me?
Earnest.
Would you accept the superpower of flying if it meant you could only ever watch television in black and white for the rest of your life?
100% yes. Even if I could only hover a bit, I'd still go for it.
True or false, Apple would have been a more successful firm if they were called Pomegranate and Steve Jobs' name was Steve Voluntary Position.
Yes, you're true, 100%.
Of course.
And of course, congratulations to all the winners at the Insurance Choice Awards 2019. Next up, we welcomed in many big cheeses this year, some of whom you'll hear in this episode. First up, we have Daniel Hegarty, CEO at Habito, to talk about all things mortgages and first-time buyers.
A lot of our listeners are going to be thinking about their first home and trying to kind of jump onto that housing ladder at some point, particularly if they're in London. It's a bit of a dream for many of us. What do you think first-time buyers need to be particularly aware of when getting mortgage advice?
Yeah, I think, you know, so there's many, many challenges facing first-time buyers in this market, although you might argue it's the best it's been maybe in the last 10 years with the kind of help to buy and so on and so forth and shared ownership. I think the core thing is just being realistic about the costs that you're going to face. And obviously saving the deposit is one thing, but then you're going to have, depending on the price of the property, you may have stamp duty, there's going to be legal, there's going to be survey, there's going to be conveyancing, there's going to be fees. I think it's being realistic about what you're getting into. I think one of the challenges, so if you, not to get too technical about it, but roughly speaking, having a mortgage on a month-to-month basis is about half as expensive as renting the same property. So there's a huge kind of economic imperative to try and get yourself onto the housing ladder. But the fixed costs of that first step are really, really meaningful. And I think what we're seeing is, I guess, a kind of collapsing of the housing ladder, if you like. People aren't moving rung by rung by rung because it's just too expensive. So instead, people are saving for longer and trying to buy a property that they can live in for several years.
Do you think things like rent recognition would help? So if more mortgage lenders actually could see that you're spending £1,200 on your rent in London and able to afford that, but actually the money that you save and the fact that it's a cheaper mortgage doesn't seem to be part of the factor when they're thinking about affordability and things like that.
So a lot of the kind of affordability analysis was a function of, you know, the mortgage market review, which was a function of the financial crisis. So there's a lot of really kind of well-meaning, kind of well-thought-out regulation that's trying to protect consumers from ending up underwater or losing their homes or being in an unaffordable situation. So that's definitely a good thing, but the kind of unintended consequence of that is it's excluding lots of first-time buyers from market. And also, because they look at it, the affordability on a monthly basis, it's extending mortgage terms. So now we're seeing 40 years become very, very common. And the difference between, I'm going to get my sums wrong, but I think roughly speaking, the difference between a 25-year and a mortgage and a 25-year mortgage and a 40-year mortgage is about 100% of the interest. So you're doubling the cost of that mortgage by extending it that far out.
Good morning, Sweetie Paul and Hassel Claims. How can I help?
Hello, is this Admiral at the winner of the Insurance Choice Award for Best Home Insurance Provider?
This is Admiral, yes indeed. How can I help?
Oh, God.
Apologies. I'm not an existing customer. I was just wondering. Did Admiral cover for wasp infestation?
If you were to be a platinum policy holder with the Home Emergency Service, they would get rid of the wasp for you.
Bugger off! You see, the thing is, well, I wanted to farm wasps as I'm somewhat of a honey connoisseur. But turns out that wasps don't foster honey. That's actually bees. Were you aware of this?
Yes, sir, I was.
Yes, so as I was saying, I'd quite like a policy to protect against wasps. Oh, God, there's one in my collar. So how about it? Can I get a wasp policy?
None of our policies allow... As in what sort of policy would you want, sir?
Wasps. I need help with the wasps.
Your best bet is to get somebody local, sir, because if we were to set up a policy, you wouldn't be able to use those services for 14 days after the policy was set up. You'll need to get a pest controller locally to sort the problem out for you.
Okay. Thank you, Admiral.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Ow!
You okay?
Yes, no, I'm quite alright. The problem seem to sort itself out now.
But yes, you need to contact a local pest controller, sir.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Thank you. Sorry about the bother.
Bye-bye.
No
problem. Bye.
And that was Mr. Money there, providing one of his weekly calls to the patient and mostly understanding call centres of Great Britain. Next up, producer Eddie spoke to scam baiter Jim Browning about his experiences of taking down scammers across a wide array of call centres.
What scams, in your experience, do you find are the most prevalent?
Yeah, so it tends to be the ones that I most see are the ones pretending to be your internet service provider, whether it's Sky or TalkTalk or BT. They will phone up with a message along the lines of, your computer is reporting a problem, please call our number or press a button on your phone to speak to us about it. That has, up until about a year ago, that was the one you would hear most often. The one you hear nowadays, though, is we're your credit card provider and we've seen a strange transaction on your account. And again, phone us and you'll have to, again, let us have access to your computer so we can check all of this out. That tends to be what's happening at the moment. But these scammers will change their tactics from time to time, maybe change that message. But the overall scam remains the same. They will want to talk to them. They will give you a convincing sounding story. And they'll want access to your computer to get into your bank account.
So do you think like part of their tactic to extract cash from their victims is to be as friendly and amicable as possible?
Oh, absolutely. So it is entirely to get money out of you.
And how far is your branch? Can you just let me know? Half a mile. And how long does it take for you to reach down to the branch?
As always, you'll only hear the scammer's voice in these videos.
And you still drive, all right? Oh, lovely. That's lovely. You're 91 and you still drive. That's a lovely thing, okay? That's lovely, all right? I've never expected somebody like at the age of 90 will be driving a car, all right?
Indeed. Most scam companies will try to appear as professional as possible. And if you had for example, a pop-up on your computer which says you've got a virus and you've got to phone this number, they will go in and cleanly remove that for you. Not that there was anything wrong in the first place, but it will look as if they've done something where they haven't really done anything at all. And follow it up in a very professional way. They will give you a courtesy call within a few days to say, is everything still okay? Well, it's really there was nothing wrong in the first place, and you've just handed over some money for absolutely nothing.
And I've noticed like a theme throughout your videos is the reverse connection, so allowing a connection between the two computers and then kind of using that to your advantage to connect to their network. Can I ask what kind of reaction do you get when the scammer on the other end of the phone realizes that you've hijacked their computer?
Yes, I don't often tell them that I've hijacked their, well, not initially anyway. I have a mechanism where sometimes I can connect back to theirs, and it means literally getting a hold of everything they have on their computer, so all their files and documents. But equally, I can listen in And if they have a webcam themselves, I can even see these scammers.
All right, so the reason behind the call today, sir, is to let you know about some error and warning files which are running on your computer without your knowledge. So are you in front of the computer at the moment?
Yes, let me start it up here, 1 second. There's like
oh my goodness.
Errors, warning.
Now, without wasting any more time of yours, sir, I would be simply asking you, like, have you ever seen these problems before?
Right.
These are very, very harmful and dangerous. The error indicates that more than 60% of your softwares are already corrupted. Hey, what are you doing?
Can't don't try communicate. Which one do
at the very top. Do you see?
Hi, are you still there?
Hey, you motherfucker.
Well, you are. You're the one who's scamming, aren't you, Marachud?
Hey, you motherfucker.
Well, it was good to capture everything that I saw on your desktop. You're a bit stupid, aren't you?
Now, time for another big cheese. Our debut episode of Money Bites asked, can we trust app-based current accounts? And to answer this question, we welcomed in Norris Koppel, founder and CEO at app-based banking challenger, Moniz.
Tell us a bit more about the kind of pain points that kind of brought you to thinking about Moniz and bringing it to life.
As you can hear from the accent, I'm clearly not British. And when I moved over here to London, I struggled with account opening. And I had my all my ducks in a row in my own country, and I had, you know, good credit history and all that. Sadly, the big bank declined my account opening application just because I didn't have a utility bill in London. So I just took offense, really, and I decided to do something about it. And here we are now. So we are an incredibly open-minded financial services provider. And our idea is that anyone who is legal, who has identity document, should really be given real-time access to financial services. And that should really not be your pain point when you move countries. That should be the last thing you want to worry about, really.
And what is next for Moniz? I know you talked about, you know, the kind of global aspirations and supporting more customers in their native languages and the marketplace. But what is the ultimate vision? Where do you think Moniz will be in the next 5 years?
I can give you all sorts of answers. I can talk about wonderful growth where millions of people will happily enjoying Moniz and all that. And I can also talk about market expansion. And this is everything that we do, of course, as well. But I'm more focused on sort of giving customers a truly global product that changes the way you consume financial services or banking service today. So I think we are on this top of this wave at the moment, this innovation and fintech wave that really pushes the boundaries. So basically what we are aiming to do is making customers' life, especially international, incredibly easy. We have grown massively and the product is in a really good shape. But again, with such growth, we have been doing some corner cutting in terms of product experience, for example, and so on. So I think now we are really going to be focusing in the sort of the next year or so. We are really focusing on improving the experience generally, just to make sure that things are top of the top. So that's I think the next sort of a challenge for the next 6 months to 1 year.
Well, if you've been keeping up with our Money Bites podcast, you'll know that when me and Nate disagree on a personal finance topic, we settle it the only way we know how, by stepping into the ring and fighting it out. On episode 6 of the podcast, it was Black Box Insurance that saw us trade some verbal blows.
I guess nothing is perfect 100% of the time, and with some insurers claiming that black boxes have helped to reduce accidents by 30% in the 17 to 19 age category, then surely black boxes should be due a little more credit.
I think you're right, Nate. I mean, it does seem really logical that having something in your car that monitors your driving would actually help to encourage better driving. It's a bit like being monitored by CCTV when you're walking down the street. You're less likely to throw some litter on the ground. But for a growing amount of drivers, I think having a black box in their car has led to a lot of stress for them.
So what kind of things are they talking about?
Well, there's really three key things that we see from our reviewers around black box or telematics car insurance at Smart Money People. So on the tech front, we've got things like the accuracy of data. It's a really common complaint. We've had countless drivers telling us that the data being pumped out by their black boxes just doesn't stack up. So imagine being asleep in bed and being told that you're caught speeding on the M25 by your black box. Black box policies can also have curfews that aren't always clear from the get-go. Now, it's true that driving at night increases the risk of an accident, but drivers clearly not impressed with being told that they can't drive at night. This isn't so much a tech issue, but more to do with the way a policy is being sold by insurance companies. And finally, another non-tech issue with black box insurance. If you ever need more miles within your policy, you should be scared. A number of black box insurance companies seem to view these as an opportunity to charge sky-high prices for more miles. So as a driver, you've really got two options. You can either accept the cost of these new miles or take out a policy with a new insurer, which means you end up paying for two policies at the same time, effectively a ludicrous situation to find yourself in.
All that sounds the alarm bells, but for many young drivers in particular, black box insurance will continue to be the only game in town. It's the only way young drivers can afford to get on the road these days.
Look, it's very true. Black box insurance is marketed to young drivers as a way of getting them on the road because it helps to measure their risk and hopefully to make them drive better and a bit more carefully. And no one is really suggesting that black boxes are going to go away anytime soon. But it's not just a few reviewers that are pointing out these issues. The Financial Ombudsman is also taking note, having put telematics insurance on its watch list due to a rising amount of complaints.
On balance, young drivers may still need black box insurance to get on the road, and evidence also suggests that they are helping to make the road safer. But make sure you check the terms and conditions, and if at all possible, look for alternatives. Not all insurance providers offering black box insurance are bad, but there's a few that really are worrying. So on balance, Mike, I think drivers should be very cautious about getting black box insurance. And next, if you've tracked our Skittlemania leaderboard, you'll know that I led the pack in our weekly chopstick competition. Each week we've had guests attempt to transfer Skittles between two cups using only chopsticks, all whilst answering some of the silliest questions the Smart Money People team can muster. Well, it was in episode 9 that editor-in-chief Tanya Andreasen from FinTech Futures ripped through the leaderboard with an unbelievable 17 Skittles.
Tanya, what would you call your pet chimpanzee?
Skittles.
Can milk ever go in the mug before the water?
Yes.
That's the first one down. What is top of your Christmas list?
Oh, man. In you... Oh, Alexa. I want Alexa.
In what month does your big winter coat come out?
November. Oh.
Mince pies, yay or nay?
Yay. Especially with icing.
What mode of transport do you think you'll use to get to work in 2030?
Autonomous cars.
Tanya's doing very well on the school.
Am I fantastic?
Nate is looking very worried. How many times in your life do you think you've sneezed?
Oh, 1,000 times.
We are 47 seconds in.
Oh, man. I am getting there. Look at that.
What would you cook as your main dish on Come Dine With Me?
Pancakes.
Pancakes with 20 seconds to go. If you were to perform on Stars in Their Eyes, who would you perform as?
Diana Ross,
what a choice. Last question, 5 seconds left. If dogs could talk, what would they tell us?
Oh my god, I love you, take me for a walk.
And that's all I've got time for. Tanya, I'm going to count your Skittles. It looks like quite a haul.
Okay, do these count?
They don't count. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16... 17 Skittles for Tanya from FinTech Futures. That puts Tanya at the top of our leaderboard.
It's Skittle carnage here. Look at that. I am so pleased.
That's amazing, Tanya.
I am
hidden
so
talent.
Pleased.
Well, look, Tanya, thank you.
I feel like I need
again.
A trophy and then give a speech. I want to thank my mom and the industry. And shed a tear. Yes. My greatest achievement.
Next up, it's time for another of our big cheeses. In episode 11, we travel to Nest to talk to Helen Dean, their CEO. Here, Helen talks us through how we can all start pension planning. How much does, say, the average 30-year-old need to be saving for their retirement?
There's no simple, easy answer to that because it does depend on the individual. It depends how much you earn. And it depends what your needs and wants are in retirement. But there are some rules of thumb. So if you start with the auto-enrolment minimum, that's 8%. So 8% of your salary going in over a lifetime of saving is the minimum that the government mandated. Is that enough? Well, probably not. For most people, that's probably not enough. and most people probably want to think about saving a bit more. And that's because often when people are thinking about their retirement income, they think in terms of something called replacement rates. So how much of the income that I have in work do I want to have in retirement? And generally people look at between about a half and three quarters of their in-work income as their aim for retirement. So obviously that means that the more that you're earning, proportionally the more of your salary you need to save. So higher earners probably need to save a little bit more. But really, the thing about saving for retirement is to start early and to keep saving continuously. It's magical. Einstein said that something called compound interest was the eighth wonder of the world. So start when you're young, benefit from the magic of compound interest, keep saving regularly, and you'll probably be in a good place when you retire.
So auto-enrollment still failing you, but massive, and as you said, you know, Monest is growing a significant amount every month. But alongside auto-enrollment, we've had the rise of the gig economy and more of us going into freelance roles. So I read something that said about 50% of everyone of working age is expected to be freelance within a decade, which is still massively shocking to me. What's the answer for that emerging majority? How do they also get, you know, how do they get encouraged, incentivised from a pensions perspective?
That's such a great question, because it's the next problem, I think, that we as a society really have to think about. How do we help those people to save? So if you look at people who are self-employed and people who are working in the gig economy, the first thing I would say is, if you ask them, they will typically say that they really want to be in a pension. But actually, I think only about 17% of them are. So there's a big disconnect between people's desire to be saving for their retirement and the reality. Now, any self-employed person can come to Nest. Nest is open to all self-employed people, but they do have to make their mind up to do it. So some of the behavioural barriers that were working against employed people before automatic enrolment start are there, working against self-employed people.
Now, here at Smart Money People, our bread and butter is customer feedback. So across the Money Bites archive, you can find a series of our most passionate reviews, recreated into blisteringly dramatic monologues.
Their adverts should display this bank's a dictatorial dinosaur. Products are less than ordinary. Rates are generally awful. But the most frustrating thing is their online system. Not only do you have this silly, tiny, turn itself off half the time before you manage to press the right button security device, which you need to generate a code to do pretty ordinary things like just send a message to them or even just apply for a new product. I find the most annoying thing is when you have successfully set up a payee, and well, then you want to prove it works, but they will go and delete it without asking or telling you beforehand. Whilst being with them, we have sent forms to them with more than the one form in the envelope. To ensure they were aware that the envelope contained multiple forms, this was clearly and boldly written on both sides of the envelope, as well as inside the opening flap. They processed only the one form and were completely unable to locate the others sent. Apologies were meagre.
I am sorry.
They hardly even acknowledged their own incompetence.
I am sorry.
They do not listen. Other banks and societies who actually consider customer needs are there. I recommend to use them rather than this lot. I've tried to bring up matters directly with them to improve things, but they really do not want to know. So maybe publicly showing people what they might be having to put up with could get this head-in-the-sand attitude to change.
And that's all from the Money Bites podcast for 2019. We'll be back in the new year with more Skittlemania, big cheeses, and a lot more. For now, please remember to like, subscribe, and why not follow us at Smart Money People. And before you leave to get that Christmas turkey or nut roast in the oven, stick around for Mr. Money's final prank call of 2019. Goodbye.
Today, you ordered to view at Wise Driving. How can I assist you today?
Hello. I'm calling regarding the black box insurance. As funny, I only heard about this recently. May I ask, is it exclusively for cars, for vehicular cars?
How do you mean?
Does it work on other vehicles?
We only provide private car policies, so we only know it to work on those private vehicles.
Yeah. Right. Well, what it is, you see, I have an inquiry. You see, my wife, she goes on these late night runs, and you should see her. She's a very erratic runner. She goes in and out the roads, swerves into people's gardens. She's a bulldozer cannonballing down our high street. You wouldn't believe it. So why I'm calling is, I was wondering, is there any chance, just as a one-off, I could have one of these black box gimmicks installed upon her person? So then me, you and her, we could just monitor how erratic her running really is, just so I can prove a point, really.
You'd want to attach the black box to her?
Well, not attached, just, she can hold it while she runs.
No, I only know to work on vehicles, but not to carry around in person.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, she's actually been texting Harold from the badminton club as well, and I was wondering... Sorry, hang on one moment. God, she's taking a lap around the house. Elizabeth! Elizabeth! Elizabeth, will you stop? Elizabeth! Elizabeth, you're breaking the fine chinas! They're family heirlooms! Apologies. She appears to have stopped. So how about it? Could we get Elizabeth one of these black boxes?
Unfortunately not. We only provide them for vehicle insurance on our end.
Yeah, okay, well, maybe something to aim for in the future, hey?
Yes, I'll make sure to leave a note.
Okay, yes, please just run it up the flagpole. No problem, not your fault. It was lovely speaking to you this morning.
Thank you so much for calling in, okay?
All right, that's quite all right. Goodbye.